Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, filling in this week for Alan Chartok, and joining us our great friend, Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union. Casey, welcome back to the show.
David, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Well, and especially on a week when we had elections and a lot to talk about. Let's start with the ballot question about putting more casinos in upstate New York. It has passed. Not by the margins we thought, though, and certainly when you look at New York City. Casey, take it away.
Well, it cleared. It won by about 6 percentage points, or at least that's where it was about 1 o'clock when I left the newsroom on election night. But of course, you know, a narrow win is still a win. And this will allow not only the construction initially of 4 casinos upstate, in 4 to be built in 3 zones in the Binghamton area and kind of reaching northward, in our own capital region and down in the Catskills. It is likely that the Catskills, because of its proximity to the major population center of New York City. And its history as a great resort zone, will probably get 2 of those 4. But of course, that remains to be seen. Now, the kind of musical chair game, or a very expensive musical chair game,
sure,
to get these franchises happens. But what was interesting about the vote, which was a win by about 6 points again, was where it won, where the big margins were. The Catskills, very big in favor. It was about a 2-to-1 win.
Follow Casey on this. This is really interesting and fascinating to see. It's telltale almost.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and down there you had State Senator John Bonasek, who was a major proponent of the legislative campaign that put this on the ballot in the first place. He's the chair of the Senate's Gaming Committee. He worked very hard for this, and he definitely got results. 2-to-1 in Orange, Putnam, Broome counties really, really helped. In the city, it was a little bit more mixed. It was narrowly defeated in New York County by about 1,300 votes. Very, very narrow, but still defeated.
Going against a late Siena poll that was showing that perhaps it would be the, quote, 42% out of New York that would push it over the top.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that in the Bronx and Queens, it was a huge yes vote. Huh. It was almost a 2-to-1 margin. And then when you get out into Western New York, the map becomes much more mixed. I mean, that's what we're all going to be looking at, you know, in the aftermath, is exactly what the kind of crazy quilt of yes and no votes were. And you've got to remember that going forward, it appears that a community's approval of a casino is going to be very important as to whether or not one is actually allowed there. Now, it gets very interesting when you move to our own capital region, where the day after Election Day, the 3 counties that actually had their numbers in, Schenectady, Saratoga, and Albany, all defeated the amendment narrowly, but still, it was a no vote. Also, Warren County, just north of the kind of Saratoga area, that was a very narrow, only about 300 votes, but still a defeat as well. Saratoga, of course, is seen as a likely
right.
site for the Capital Region's casino, perhaps could be as an expanded version of the Saratoga Casino and Raceway, which
right.
is the quote-unquote Racino that is there already. James Featherstonaugh, who is the head of the State Gaming Association, has made it clear that he thinks that his facility, he's a co-owner of Saratoga Casino and Raceway, could be up and running really quickly, generating money for the state. The governor has said that that Racinos have no inside track, as it were, for these franchises. But still, there you go. We'll
what
see.
Do you make of it, though? What do you make of the defeat in this region? Do you have any idea, any thought as to why?
Well, in Saratoga, I think it has to do with the potential damage that could be done to the racing industry, which, of course, is traditionally so bound up in the community's identity. I think in the other urban areas,
and has been having some trouble of its own.
Oh, considerable trouble in recent years. I mean, The fear there is that Saratoga is kind of paired with a declining industry, as it were. In Albany and in Schenectady, I think you have to look for those kind of quality of life questions as well. Mayor Jerry Jennings, the outgoing mayor of Albany, has said, "Geez, why don't we have a how about having a casino in Albany? Wouldn't that be great?"
Isn't there one? The legislature?
Yeah,
oh, I'm
exactly.
Sorry.
It's a floating crap game, I think you call that. But it's absolutely fascinating. I think the key that can be taken away from this is that the win, narrow as it was, 6%, was a result of the very good, very well-organized late push by a coalition of labor groups, some education money, gaming interests called New York Jobs Now, that did a real media blitzkrieg in the last couple of weeks, very, very quiet until those last weeks, but then came out with TV spots and everything else. What we have heard is that the governor's people worked very hard to kind of organize that and bring it together. Howard Glazer, the governor's director of state operations, has apparently been sort of seconded to the Proposal 1 effort over the course of the last couple of weeks, and it worked. They blanketed the state with ads touting the hoped-for economic benefits, salary increases for gaming and lodging industry workers.
Echoed by last-minute robocalls by the governor himself.
And, of course, yes, exactly. In early the week, I think just the day before the vote,
yes,
pretty much everybody I know but me got one of these robocalls from the governor. Right, exactly. And what's interesting about that is that the governor has been very careful in the last couple of weeks. He has noted that he is in favor of it, but he has to kind of be careful where he says that. In
yes.
other words, if he goes and has a press conference on some other issue, let's say, out in Buffalo, and he's asked about it, he can't be too effusive because that his getting out there uses state resources. Any electioneering or advocacy that employs state resources is a no-no. But of course, if the governor just wants to sit in his kitchen down in Westchester and record a robocall, that's hunky-dory.
Well, is it hunky-dory with the Native American casinos? Now, the governor pulled off something this year,
right,
which was amazing. I mean, no governor before him that I know of has been able to wrangle a deal with the Native American casinos in New York, and he really worked hard at that.
Plural.
Yeah, right,
yeah,
because
three.
There was Central and Western.
And North Country.
And North Country.
Right.
He made those deals, and now he gets state-run casinos. How is this all going to work out?
Exactly. The deals that were struck in the spring really kind of cleared the decks. And what the governor's people were saying just before the vote, knowing that it was going to be narrow, you could say they hedged their bets, if you'll excuse the expression, by noting, hey, you know what? Even if this goes down, we still used the threat or the imminence of this proposal going before voters to wrap up, to close these longstanding disputes with Native tribes in those three areas. In other words, if these deals had not been struck, which grants those Native casinos exclusivity, if you were a Native tribe that owned a casino out in Buffalo, you could be dealing with one right across the street, as it were, if you didn't guarantee your own zone. And so that has now been accomplished. The state is now getting not all the money it feels it deserves, but a big chunk of the money
that it deserves.
Yeah, from the kind of back payments that were owed. But now, of course, that also brings some kind of a predictability to where these casinos are going to go. As said, the Native casinos are going to have exclusivity within their zones, and in the Binghamton area, the Capital Region, and the Catskills, we know where those four upstate casinos are going to go. But we still don't know where the three downstate casinos
right.
will go in 6 or 7 years when upstate exclusivity ends. We also don't know what will happen to the upstate casinos when downstate gets their casinos. Will the upstate casinos wither and die because the people who were flowing up to go to them are now going, who knows, out to Long Island, out to Aqueduct, who knows where they're going to be?
Right, and I think that's the big question, right? Going forward, will these prove to be economic engines for these areas?
Right, correct. We've seen all kinds of warm predictions from advocates, but it's still a very open question as to whether or not people are going to want to get on the bus and go up to Binghamton or, even Saratoga or wherever these casinos go. We also don't know what the casinos are going to have on kind of the larger community.
Right.
We know
what about entertainment? I mean, we had this whole coalition that developed, Philip Morris out of Proctor's leading the charge in the area of these casinos having entertainment complexes as well and putting on shows and taking away from the revenue of local theaters.
Vacuuming up exclusivity deals, not with casinos, but with the performers who would appear at those casinos. In other words, if somebody comes to a Saratoga, if Tom Jones, for example, right, goes to play at Saratoga.
Wouldn't be unusual.
Would not. I see what you did there. That was good. But if he then signed an exclusivity deal that knocks him out from performing at the Palace or Proctor's or any other Capital Region facility, that could leave those venues, those halls, with empty
seats,
programs,
yeah,
empty seats, empty programs. They're very concerned. What the state says is that any casino that comes in is going to have its license predicated on a kind of cooperation agreement with the kind of local artistic community. But that's still a big open question.
Man, we got so much to cover. Okay, let's move to the ballot question that was defeated, and that is the raising of the retirement age for certain state judges.
Yeah, this was soundly defeated. It really was. It was Proposal 6, and it would have boosted the retirement age to 80, which would have meant a potential of four extra years for state Supreme Court justices, but a potential extra 10 years for Court of Appeals judges in which they could have completed their given term, which is 14 years. And Judge Jonathan Lippman of the Court of Appeals, the state's chief judge, was a big advocate for it. But it was really shot down. It was the only proposal to be defeated out of the half dozen on the ballot.
You want to speculate as to why?
Well, polls always suggested that people were against it. It was very difficult for advocates to mount a campaign like the one that we saw for casinos by New York Jobs Now, because, of course, judges can't exactly be in the business of advocating for big money contributions to pay for ads or things like that. And I think if you wanted to speculate, you could say that it was seen by many voters as posing a risk of turning the state's top courts into kind of a gerontocracy. That people like the idea of, you know, and I use this term advisedly, the old kind of fading away and fresh ideas coming up, and that it could have turned into a bar or a barricade to perhaps gaining diversity on the courts, I should say, plural. It is another big win for Governor Cuomo,
because it means that
he is going to be able to shape the next majority on the Court of Appeals, because if he wins a second term, which at this point appears more than likely, he will get to pick, I think it's three or four judges, including the chief judge, because Jonathan Lippman is 68. At 70, he will have to tender his retirement.
As Blair Horner, the legislative director for Nightberg, put it, it seems like in that rule they have legislated constitutionally ageism.
Yes, that is true. That is absolutely true. And Judge Lippman and the many advocates for a yes vote on this proposal made the case that this age limit has been in effect since right after the Civil War. And and it was a vestige, a leftover of an age when, you know, you and I would have been old men.
Elderly.
You're what? You're in your late 30s now?
No, I'm in my almost mid-40s,
man. You don't look it at all.
Thanks.
But, you know, we would have been elderly, or at least in the prime
Absolutely.
Of our careers. We would have been lucky to have all our teeth at this point.
We would have been wheeled into the studio.
Yes, exactly. People are now living longer, and the case that Lippman and others made was that on these top courts, you need seasoned jurists who had that kind of depth of experience. So a win or a loss, depending on how you want to look at it.
Now to a couple other ballot questions. We head up north to the Adirondack Park, and there was a couple there. Let's talk about them. One had to do with a deal, a land swap deal, so that a mining company could mine a parcel, which, according to what I read, they would have to return to its pristine state after they were done mining, and then the land would go back to the park. That one passed.
Passed very narrowly. Passed by this was Proposal 5 involving the Nyco mining company up in Essex County. They have had a wollastonite mine up there. It's an open pit mine. What this allows them to do is to move into a 200-acre, roughly, parcel that it's not even a lock that they're going to mine it. This just gives them the option of mining it if, in fact, they find the wollastonite that they are hoping is there.
And they've been there for a long time, right? 60
years?
60 years,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And in exchange, the state will get a set of parcels that the company holds title to. The 200-acre holding or grant to this company will be temporary. Once they're done with it, they will have to return it to nature. It's a big net gain for the Forest Preserve, but it earned the objection of some, but not all, environmental groups who objected to what they saw as a dangerous precedent of a land swap that in any way benefits, even if it's a net gain for the preserve, benefits a private company.
So the Adirondack Council, for example, supported it, while the Committee to Protect the Adirondacks did not, right?
Correct. Yeah, there were a couple of groups that
which
that
is really interesting if you think about it, because if both groups are trying to protect the environment and there's a disagreement, I would think it would make a regular citizen go, geez, I got to really look at this.
Right. And in the case that was made by the mining company and by community groups and by many of the environmental groups is that, look, we've got criteria here for what is a good land swap. It's got to be a major net benefit to the park. And the case was made that this preserves a lot of jobs in Essex County, which is kind of up against it, one of the many kind of rural areas in the states that are up against it economically. And I think the argument that carried the day in communities across the state, because we all own the Forest Preserve, is who are we to tell these people that basically their economy has to go into the bin in order to preserve 200 acres of the Forest Preserve.
And there was another land swap, wasn't there?
Yeah, somewhat fascinating.
Very interesting.
Yeah, Proposal 4 involved a whole series of land disputes that had been festering, burbling around Racket Lake, also up in the Adirondacks.
Private landowners versus
private. Yeah, private landowners whose claim to the land had been thrown into dispute by century-old title disagreements. In other words, cases where, whether through poor record-keeping or having a rotten attorney, you know, back in the World War I era, your family was hit with a big tax bill, their claim to the land was placed in doubt, and this now, it's once again a land swap that the legislature can now approve that settles, as it were, all family business.
It's safe to say that this is not unique to this region.
No, but it was absolutely fascinating. My I co-host New York Now, and my colleague went up there, Matt Ryan, and he got a tour around some of these plots, and apparently it's almost like the cottages that have been built on these properties, almost like stills. There's like, don't let the government find out that you've actually got a cottage up there. So it's really something.
Well, then there was another ballot question about benefits for veterans.
This one was a big winner. This was Proposal 2, and I'll see if I can explain it deftly. Basically, veterans and disabled veterans get benefits on civil service exams when they are hired and when they are promoted. Basically, if you're a veteran, you get a certain number of benefits in either case. If you're a disabled veteran, you get twice as many credits. The problem was that if you were a veteran and you were hired or you were promoted, you could claim the benefit for being a veteran. But then if you subsequently became disabled, you were not, in other words, you could only take one bite at the apple. This change kind of closes that loophole and allows a veteran who is hired at a civil service job but is then deemed to be disabled, he or she will be now able to draw on that additional benefit in potentially a promotion.
And it seemed like it was a huge, we've heard this before, donut hole, because if you look at a number of the soldiers that come back, I mean, PTSD and everything else that occurs after they've been deployed, you could see where this could be an issue.
Right, exactly. And both of the largest public workers unions, CSEA and PEF, came out in favor of it. I could not find anybody who was against it.
Well, it seems like more people were for electing women mayor to cities around the state. Some big changes coming.
Exactly. As I discovered, November 5th was the anniversary of the 1872 civil disobedience by Susan B. Anthony when she walked into her polling place in Rochester.
You gave me goosebumps there. Whoa.
I know. And cast a vote in the 1872 presidential election. She voted the straight Republican ticket, she told a friend. and 2 weeks later, she was arrested. Oh, how times have changed.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Rochester got its first female mayor, Lovely Warren, who was a stunning victory in the Democratic primary.
Absolutely.
Back in September, and managed to carry it through to the general despite an almost comatose effort by Tom Richards, who is the incumbent, was beaten by Lovely Warren in the Democratic primary, but he remained on the independence line. he still managed to pull almost a third, or I think a little bit more than a third, of the vote out there, despite the fact that he really wasn't campaigning. People almost had to get him in a hammer lock to get him to say that if by some weird quirk of fate he was actually elected, he would actually serve. So, but once again, Lovely Warren wins. In Albany, of course, Kathy Sheehan won, and Stephanie Miner, who, despite her occasional feuding with the governor, was reelected as mayor of Syracuse.
You got to believe that helped her in Syracuse.
I think so. I think Alan and I discussed this.
He's discussed that, yes.
And we said that her fights with the governor made it clear that she was a strong advocate for her community, especially, and for lots of upstate communities like Syracuse, which are facing a lot of fiscal pressures right now.
Let's go back to Albany, though, because this is an old boys town.
It can be. Yeah.
In the mayoral position, for sure.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is huge for Albany, isn't it?
Looking historically at the top job of mayor, yes, it's definitely been an XY chromo job forever. And Kathy Sheehan, the current treasurer, was just absolutely ran the table both in the primary and in the general election. So it was very exciting.
Well, and you mentioned a couple of cities, Albany, Rochester, and most of these upstate cities have real issues to fight and have things that are going to come up that when it's okay to get elected, but what about governing?
Yeah, they have issues that are really the same, which is a declining tax base in the urban core, suburbs that are doing better but are still stressed in a lot of ways, school districts that are up against it. You know, Stephanie Miner has been making that case, and now you've got three women who will be making many of those same arguments. It's going to be interesting to see. Of course, Mayor Jerry Jennings of Albany has had a very close relationship with Governor Cuomo almost all down the line, Occupy Albany perhaps being one episode of a certain level of disagreement or discomfort between the two of them. So it's going to be interesting to see how Kathy Sheehan, who is endorsed by Governor Cuomo, but that's almost like Governor Cuomo endorsing the sun rising in the east because she was so far ahead in all the polls, to see what kind of relationship she ends up having with the governor.
Well, one of the final things I want to talk to you about has to do with the New York Safe Act, but only in reference to a race in Saratoga where Michael Zurlo, who was a GOP candidate, won. Now, he beat in the primary Jeff Gildersleeve, who campaigned, a conservative from Ballston Lake, campaigned on this idea that he would not enforce the Safe Act. And while, you know, he was one of the more vocal ones recently, as soon as the Safe Act was passed, we had almost a revolt from many of the sheriffs and other folks across the state. So I wonder how, going forward, whether this issue will again raise its head.
Well, certainly in Zurlo's win, you've seen a victory for a kind of slightly more moderate voice of opposition to the SAFE Act. He said he doesn't like it. He said that it was passed in great haste, which of course it was. But he believes that people in Saratoga County have larger law enforcement concerns right now.
And as a law enforcer,
yeah, one would hope that he would be in favor of enforcing the law. But Governor Cuomo, you know, certainly suffered a big hit in upstate support and support among Republicans who had voted for him in 2010. The dispute or the disagreements over the SAFE Act are going to go on because, of course, many of the provisions of the SAFE Act will go into effect next year, early next year. The ammo database, the real-time database that essentially requires a background check for any purchase of ammo, was scheduled to go into effect in the middle of January. We have now heard from the state police. Rick Carlin reported just a couple of weeks ago that it's going to be a little bit later than that. And so I think the fear is that if they set something up early, it was going to become like the firearms equivalent of the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act website. And, of course, next spring, if you have a weapon that under the act is determined to be an assault weapon, it will have to be registered. And it's going to be interesting to see as the run-up to that deadline, the deadline to register, approaches, exactly what kind of the advocacy or the activism is on that question.
We've been talking with Casey Seiler. He is the state editor and Capitol Bureau Chief for the Albany Times Union and a host of New York Now. Casey, thanks so much for joining us on the Capitol Connection.
David, thanks for having me on.
The
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.